Chapter 17. Health. This is the area where the brainwashing is the greatest. Smokers think they're aware of the health risks. They're not. Even in my case, when I was expecting my head to explode any moment and honestly believed I was prepared to accept the consequences, I was still kidding myself. If in those days I'd taken a cigarette out of the pack and a red beeper had started to sound, followed by a voice saying, "Okay, Alan, this is the one. You do get a warning, and this is it. Until now, you've gotten away with it, but if you smoke another cigarette, your head will explode." Do you think I would have lit that cigarette? If you're in doubt about the answer, just try walking up to a main road with busy traffic, standing on the curb with your eyes closed, and try to imagine you have the choice of either stopping smoking or walking blindfolded across the road before taking your next cigarette. There is little doubt what your choice would be. I've been doing what every smoker does all his smoking life, closing my mind and keeping my head in the sand, hoping I would wake up one morning and just not want to smoke anymore. Smokers can't allow themselves to think of the health risks. If they do, even the illusion of enjoying the habit goes. This explains why the shock treatment used by the media on national smokeout days is so ineffective. It's only non-smokers who can bring themselves to watch it. It also explains why smokers, recalling Uncle Fred, who smoked 40 a day and lived until he was 80, will ignore the thousands of people who are brought down in their prime because of this poisonous weed. About 6 times a week, I have the following conversation with smokers, usually the younger ones. Me: why do you want to stop? Smoker: I can't afford it. Me: aren't you worried about the health risks? Smoker: no, I could step under a bus tomorrow. Me: would you deliberately step under a bus? Smoker: of course not. Me: do you not bother to look left and right before you cross the road? Smoker: of course I do. Exactly. The smoker goes to a lot of trouble not to step under a bus, and the odds are hundreds of thousands to one against it happening. Yet the smoker risks the near certainty of being crippled by the weed and appears to be completely oblivious to the risks. Such is the power of the brainwashing. I remember one famous British golfer who wouldn't go on the American circuit because he was afraid of flying. Yet he would chain smoke around the golf course. Isn't it strange that if we felt there was the slightest fault in an airplane, we wouldn't go up in it, even though the risks are hundreds of thousands to one against death? Yet we take the 1 in 4 certainty with the cigarette and are apparently oblivious to the risks. And what does the smoker get out of it? Absolutely nothing. Another common myth about smoking is the smoker's cough. Many of the younger people who come to see me are not worried about their health because they don't cough. The facts are just the reverse. A cough is one of nature's fail-safe methods of dispelling foreign matter from the lungs. The cough itself is not a disease, it's just a symptom. When smokers cough, it's because their lungs are trying to dispel cancer-triggering tars and poisons. When they don't cough, those tars and poisons remain in their lungs, and that is when they cause cancer. Smokers tend to avoid exercise and get into the habit of shallow breathing in order not to cough. I used to believe that my permanent smoker's cough would kill me. By expelling much of the filth from my lungs, it possibly saved my life. Just think of it this way. If you had a nice car and allowed it to rust without doing anything about it, that would be pretty stupid, as it would soon be a heap of rust and wouldn't carry you about. However, that would not be the end of the world. It's only a question of money, and you could always buy a new car. Your body is the vehicle that carries you through life. We all say that our health is our most valued asset. How true that is, as sick millionaires will tell you. Most of us can look back at some illness or accident in our lives when we prayed to get better. How soon we forget. By being a smoker, you're not only letting rust get in and doing nothing about it, you're systematically destroying the vehicle you need to get through life. And you only get one. Wise up. You don't have to do it. And remember, it's doing absolutely nothing for you. Just for a moment, take your head out of the sand. Ask yourself whether, if you knew for certain that the next cigarette would be the one to trigger off cancer in your body, you would actually smoke it. Forget the disease. It is difficult to imagine it. But imagine you have to go to the hospital to suffer those awful tests, radiation treatment and so forth. Now, you're not planning the rest of your life. You're planning your death. What is going to happen to your family and loved ones, your plans and dreams? I often see the people whom it happens to. They didn't think it would happen to them, and the worst thing about it isn't the disease itself, but the knowledge that they've brought it on themselves. All our lives as smokers, we're saying, I'll stop tomorrow. Try to imagine how those people feel who hit the button. For them, the brainwashing has ended. They then see the habit as it really is, and spend the remainder of their lives thinking, why did I kid myself that I needed to smoke? If only I had the chance to go back. Stop kidding yourself. You have the chance. It's a chain reaction. If you smoke the next cigarette, it will lead to the next one and the next. It's already happening to you. At the beginning of the book, I promised you no shock treatment. If you've already decided to stop smoking, this won't be shock treatment for you. If you're still in doubt about stopping, skip the remainder of this chapter and come back to it when you've read the rest of the book. Volumes of statistics have already been written about the damage that cigarettes can cause to the smoker's health. The trouble is that until the smoker decides to stop, he doesn't want to know. Even the government health warning is a waste of time because the smoker puts blinders on, and if he inadvertently reads it, the first thing he does is light up a cigarette. Smokers tend to think of the health hazard as a hit-and-miss affair, like stepping on a mine. Get it into your head. It's already happening. Every time you puff on a cigarette, you're breathing cancer-triggering tars into your lungs. And cancer is by no means the worst of the killer diseases that cigarettes cause or contribute to. They are also a powerful contributing cause of heart disease, arteriosclerosis, emphysema, angina, thrombosis, chronic bronchitis, and asthma. While I was still smoking, I'd never heard of arteriosclerosis or emphysema. I knew the permanent wheezing and coughing and the ever-increasing asthma and bronchitis attacks were a direct result of my smoking. Although they caused me discomfort, there was no real pain, and I could handle the discomfort. I confess that the thought of contracting lung cancer terrified me, which is probably why I just blocked it from my mind. It's amazing how the fear of the horrendous health risks attached to smoking is overshadowed by the fear of stopping. It's not so much that the latter fear is greater, but that if we quit today, the fear is immediate, whereas the fear of contracting lung cancer is a fear of the future. Why look on the black side? Perhaps it won't happen. I'm bound to have quit by then anyway. We tend to think of smoking as a tug of war. On one side, fear. It's unhealthy, expensive, filthy and enslaving. On the other side, the pluses. It's my pleasure, my friend, my crutch. It never seems to occur to us that this side is also fear. It's not so much that we enjoy cigarettes, but that we tend to be miserable without them. Think of heroin addicts deprived of their heroin, the abject misery they go through. Now picture their utter joy when they're allowed to plunge a needle into their veins and end that terrible craving. Try to imagine how anyone could actually believe they get pleasure from sticking a hypodermic syringe into a vein. Non-heroin addicts don't suffer that panic feeling. Heroin doesn't relieve the feeling, it causes it. Non-smokers don't feel miserable if they're not allowed to smoke after a meal. It's only smokers that suffer that feeling. Nicotine doesn't relieve it, it causes it. The fear of contracting lung cancer didn't make me quit because I believed the risk was rather like walking through a minefield. If you got away with it, fine. If you were unlucky, you stepped on a mine. You knew the risks you were taking, and if you were prepared to take the risk, what had it to do with anyone else? So, if a non-smoker ever tried to make me aware of those risks, I would use the typical evasive tactics that all addicts invariably adopt. You have to die of something. Of course you do. But is that a logical reason for deliberately shortening your life? Quality of life is more important than longevity. Exactly. But you are surely not suggesting that the quality of life of an alcoholic or a heroin addict is greater than that of someone who isn't addicted to alcohol or heroin? Do you really believe that the quality of a smoker's life is better than a non-smoker's? Surely the smoker loses on both counts. His life is both shorter and more miserable. My lungs probably suffer more damage from car exhaust than from smoking. Even if that were true, is that a logical reason for punishing your lungs further? Can you possibly conceive of anyone being stupid enough to actually put his or her mouth over an exhaust pipe and deliberately inhale those fumes into his or her lungs? That's what smokers effectively do. Think of that the next time you watch a poor smoker inhale deeply on one of those precious cigarettes. I can understand why the congestion and the risks of contracting lung cancer didn't help me quit. I could cope with the former and block my mind to the latter. As you're already aware, my method is not to frighten you into quitting, but the complete opposite, to make you realize just how more enjoyable your life will be when you've escaped. However, I do believe that if I could have seen what was happening inside my body, it would have helped me quit. I'm not referring to the shock technique of showing a smoker the color of a smoker's lungs. It was obvious to me from my nicotine-stained teeth and fingers that my lungs weren't a pretty sight. Provided they kept functioning, they were less embarrassing than my teeth and fingers. At least nobody could see my lungs. What I'm referring to is the progressive gunking up of our arteries and veins, and the gradual starving of every muscle and organ of oxygen and nutrients to be replaced with poisons and carbon monoxide, not just from car exhausts, but also from smoking. Like the majority of motorists, I don't like the thought of dirty oil or a dirty filter in my car engine. Could you imagine buying a brand new Rolls-Royce and never changing the oil or the oil filter? That's what we effectively do to our bodies when we become smokers. Many doctors are now relating all sorts of diseases to smoking, including diabetes, cervical cancer, and breast cancer. This is no surprise to me. The tobacco industry has belabored the fact that the medical profession has never scientifically proven that smoking is the direct cause of lung cancer. The statistical evidence is so overwhelming as not to need proof. No one has ever scientifically proved to me exactly why, when I bang my thumb with a hammer, it hurts. I soon got the message. I must emphasize that I'm not a doctor, but just as with the hammer and the thumb, it soon became obvious to me that my congestion, my permanent cough, my frequent asthma, and bronchial attacks were directly related to my smoking. However, I truly believe that the greatest hazard that smoking poses to our health is the gradual and progressive deterioration of our immune system caused by this gunking up process. All plants and animals on this planet are subjected to a lifetime of attack from germs, viruses, parasites and the like. The most powerful defense we have against disease is our immune system. We all suffer infections and diseases throughout our lives. However, I don't believe that the human body was designed to be diseased. And if you're strong and healthy, your immune system will fight and defeat these attacks. How can your immune system work effectively when you're starving your muscles and organs of oxygen and nutrients and feeding them with carbon monoxide and poisons? It's not so much that smoking causes these diseases. Rather, it works like AIDS, gradually destroying your immune system. Several of the adverse effects that smoking had on my health, some of which I'd been suffering from for years, didn't become apparent to me until many years after I'd stopped smoking. While I was busy despising those idiots and cranks who would rather lose their legs than quit smoking, it didn't even occur to me that I was already suffering from arteriosclerosis myself. I attributed my almost permanently grey complexion to my natural colouring or to lack of exercise. It never occurred to me that it was really due to the blocking up of my capillaries. I had varicose veins in my 30s, which have miraculously disappeared since I stopped smoking. About 5 years before I stopped, I reached the stage when every night I would have this weird sensation in my legs. It wasn't a sharp pain or like pins and needles, just a sort of restless feeling. I would get my wife, Joyce, to massage my legs every night. It didn't occur to me until at least a year after I'd stopped that I no longer needed the massage. About 2 years before I quit, I would occasionally get violent pains in my chest, which I feared must be lung cancer, but now assume to have been angina. I haven't had a single attack since I quit. When I was a child, I would bleed profusely from cuts. This frightened me, No one explained to me that bleeding was in fact a natural and essential healing process, and that the blood would clot when its healing purpose was completed. I suspected that I was a haemophiliac, and feared that I might bleed to death. Later in life, I would sustain quite deep cuts, yet hardly bleed at all. This brown-red gunk would ooze from the cut. The colour worried me. I knew the blood was meant to be bright red, and I assumed that I had some sort of blood disease. However, I was pleased about the consistency, which meant that I no longer bled profusely. Not until after I'd stopped smoking did I learn that smoking coagulated the blood, and that the brownish colour was due to lack of oxygen. I was ignorant of the effect at the time, but in hindsight, it was this effect that smoking was having on my health that most fills me with horror. When I think of my poor heart trying to pump that gunk around restricted blood vessels day in and day out without missing a single beat, I find it a miracle that I didn't suffer a stroke or a heart attack. It made me realize not how fragile our bodies are, but what strong and ingenious machines they are. I had liver spots on my hands in my 40s, those brown or white spots that very old people have on their face and hands. I tried to ignore them, assuming that they were due to early senility caused by the hectic lifestyle that I led. It was 5 years after I'd quit that a smoker at the Raines Park Clinic remarked that when he'd stopped previously, his liver spots had disappeared. I'd forgotten about mine, and to my amazement, they too had disappeared. As long as I can remember, I had spots flashing in front of my eyes if ever I stood up too quickly, particularly if I was in a bath. I would feel dizzy as if I were about to black out. I never related this to smoking. In fact, I was convinced that it was quite normal and that everyone else had a similar reaction. Not until 10 years ago, when an ex-smoker told me that he no longer had that sensation, did it occur to me that I no longer had it either. One of the great evils about smoking is that it fools us into believing that nicotine gives us courage, when in fact it gradually and imperceptibly dissipates it. I was shocked when I heard my father say that he had no wish to live to be 50. Little did I realize that 20 years later, I would have exactly the same lack of joie de vivre. You might conclude that this chapter has been one of necessary or unnecessary doom and gloom. I promise you, it's the complete opposite. I used to fear death when I was a child. I used to believe that smoking removed that fear. Perhaps it did. If so, it replaced it with something infinitely worse. A fear of living. Now my fear of dying has returned. It doesn't bother me. I realize that it only exists because I now enjoy life so much. I don't brood over my fear of dying any more than I did when I was a child. I'm far too busy living my life to the fullest. The odds are against my living to 100, but I'll try to. I'll also try to enjoy every precious moment. There were two other advantages on the health side that never occurred to me until I'd stopped smoking. One was that I used to have repetitive nightmares every night. I would dream that I was being chased. I can only assume that these nightmares were the result of my body being deprived of nicotine throughout the night, and the insecure feeling that caused. Now the only nightmares that I have is that I occasionally dream that I'm smoking again. This is quite a common dream among ex-smokers. Some worry that it means they're still subconsciously pining for a cigarette. Don't worry about it. The fact that it was a nightmare means that you're very pleased not to be a smoker. There is that twilight zone after any nightmare when you wake up and are not sure whether it's a genuine catastrophe. But isn't it marvellous when you realise that it was only a dream? When I described being chased every night in a dream, I originally typed chased, C-H-A-S-T-E. Perhaps this was just a Freudian slip, but it does give me a convenient lead into the second advantage. At clinics, when covering the effect that smoking has on concentration, I would sometimes say, "Which organ in your body has the greatest need of a good supply of blood?" The stupid grins, usually on the faces of the men, would indicate that they'd missed the point. However, they were absolutely right. Being a somewhat shy Englishman, I find the subject rather embarrassing, and I have no intention of doing a miniature Kinsey report by going into detail about the adverse effects that smoking had on my own sexual activity and enjoyment, or that of other ex-smokers with whom I've discussed the subject. Again, I was not aware of this effect until some time after I'd stopped smoking, and had attributed my sexual prowess and activity, or rather, lack of it, to advancing years. However, if you watch nature films, you'll be aware that the first rule of nature is survival, and that the second rule is survival of the species, or reproduction. Nature ensures that reproduction doesn't take place unless the partners feel physically healthy and know that they've secured a safe home, territory, supply of food, and a suitable mate. Man's ingenuity has enabled him to bend these rules somewhat. However, I know for a fact that smoking can lead to impotency. I can also assure you that when you feel fit and healthy, you'll enjoy sex much more, and more often. Smokers also suffer the illusion that the ill effects of smoking are overstated. The reverse is the case. There is no doubt that cigarettes are the number one cause of preventable death in society. The trouble is that in many cases where cigarettes cause the death or are a contributing factor, it's not blamed on cigarettes in the statistics. It's been estimated that 44% of household fires are caused by cigarettes. I wonder how many road accidents have been caused by cigarettes during that split second the driver takes his eye off the road to light up. I'm normally a careful driver, but the nearest I came to death, except from smoking itself, was when trying to roll a cigarette while driving. I hate to think of the number of times I coughed a cigarette out of my mouth while driving. It always seemed to end up between the seats. I'm sure many other smoking drivers have had the experience of trying to locate the burning cigarette with one hand while trying to drive with the other. The effect of the brainwashing is that we tend to think like the man who, having fallen from a 100-story building, is heard to say as he passes the 50th floor, "So far, so good." We think that since we've gotten away with it so far, one more cigarette won't make the difference. Try to see it another way. The habit is a continuous chain for life, each cigarette creating the need for the next. When you start the habit, you light a fuse. The trouble is, you don't know how long the fuse is. Every time you light a cigarette, you are one step nearer to the bomb exploding. How will you know if it's the next one?